This is CliffCentral.com. Good morning, everybody. Are we okay? Are we happy and healthy? Ready to take on the week? Have you recovered from your swine flu, Sia?
I'm happy, yes. Healthy, almost healthy.
Jeez, it's been hitting everyone.
Yeah, I had to visit the doctor again over the weekend.
Ben is pretty sure he's dying. He sent me a message yesterday to say
he has bronchitis.
I'm not going to make it.
He has itis of the bronchi.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
What does that mean, Dr. Leanne?
Bronchitis.
Thanks.
Bronchitis?
Yes.
I don't know what is going on with this flu season.
I haven't been hit yet, but yeah.
I think I got mine out of the way early.
Yeah, you did too.
I was quite responsible about it. Got it the fuck out of there immediately.
Moved on, right? I was in the doctor's waiting room over the weekend with about 4 other people. Mm-hmm. Just stepping into that room, I'm pretty sure if you were A-okay and healthy, you would have contracted something stepping into that room.
Well, I woke up to go give me a cold pop.
Then
I thought somebody was barbecuing. Then I ran out. I didn't grab no shoes or nothing, Jesus. I said, oh, Lord Jesus, it's a fire. I ran for my life. And then the smoke got me. I got bronchitis.
Mm. Yeah.
Ain't nobody got time for that. Yes. There were sniffles galore. Mm. Everyone is just coughing and splattering on top of each other. Up until I got to a point where I said, you know what, screw it. There's no trying to avoid this right now.
Yeah.
Then I had to go to the pharmacy afterwards, and I'm pretty certain we had the world's least affectionist pharmacist.
Oh, really? Just didn't give a shit?
At all.
Really?
And it was just like, what's wrong with you?
Not interested, huh?
Come in. What's your symptoms?
Nothing. Just get out of my way. Hurry up.
Okay. Yeah. Let me tell you, I'm dying.
Because he's probably had everyone like you with the same sickness come in all day. He's just handing over flu meds in bulk.
She was probably just counting down until her shift was over. But yeah, just everyone is sick.
I'm curious. Like, it seems to me that there are a lot of people who, you know, they seem to think it's okay to cough on each other. Now, I know that is not good. Mm. And washing your hands is another thing that people, you can do this to mitigate the risk.
Yeah,
you can't completely save yourself. Exactly. I mean, if it's going to get you, it's going to get you. Coughing is going to get you.
You know what's annoying is when you have to travel with someone in a car or in a taxi and they're sick, but they're not wearing a mask. It's
irritating. That's dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I don't like other people. That's why I live on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this weekend, and I saw some friends in Durban, but most of the time I was on my own.
Oh, right, you were in Durban.
Fantastic, okay? And I realized, first of all, I was actually lying on the beach on Sunday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's nice.
It was warm. It was fantastic. Durban is just so civilized from a climate point of view.
Yeah. Mm.
The rest of the world could learn.
It's very temperate.
Yeah, like everybody up here was freezing their tits off and closing doors and windows and hiding indoors and putting on heaters.
Yeah, I had to fill up my electricity twice.
Yeah, because you're using up all that electricity to make heat.
Heaters, electric blankets.
But I was sitting in the sun, and there were quite a few people on the beach. It wasn't like crowded. But I thought, yeah, you know what? This is good. I can see why people live here.
What were you? You weren't wearing like shorts.
No, I was.
Gee, that's really nice.
Yeah, it's
like properly warm.
I didn't have a shirt on. I was lying on a towel. It's awesome. I didn't go into the water, but I was lying on the beach. It was brilliant.
Mm.
Got a little bit of sun, which is always nice. Vitamin D, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I felt good. And there were a lot of people. Man, the flight back, I was wedged between these two guys.
Oh, your favorite, the middle
they
seat.
Well, they weren't enormous, but yeah, I got a middle seat going down and coming back. But you know, Durban, you can handle. It's an hour. You're not going to die. If it was Cape Town, I'd be like, this is not great. But I don't want to be also one of these complaining people. If you pay an economy class seat, you get an economy class seat.
Yeah.
You can't sit there and bitch about it then. If you're lucky enough, like it's happened to me a couple of times where you end up with this, you know, there's a seat right next to you that's open.
Mm.
That's terrific. But that's not what, if you want that, book that every time. Book two. If you're so, you know, needy and you think you're so important that you should have more space. But otherwise, you just got to get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
You get what you pay for. That's what life's all about. Wah, it's unfair. So I had a bit of a, you know, tight sort of trip back.
Mm-hmm.
But they were both quiet.
And it's a short trip as well.
They minded their own business. I minded my own business. Nobody bothered each other. And, you know, got back here and I thought, wow, it's actually really easy to go down to Durban. And it wasn't expensive either.
A little under an hour.
Yeah. It's quick. It's such a, it's a piece of cake. And if I'd driven down, I think it would have cost me more.
Mm-hmm.
Petrol.
That's it.
All the toll roads.
Wear and tear.
Yeah, I think it would have cost me more to drive down. So people always go, oh, well, it's, you know, don't have the money to fly down. But actually, you'd save yourself money if you flew rather than drove.
Mm.
That's my feeling anyway. I mean, look, I had to get a couple of Ubers on that side. But, yeah,
mm-hmm.
You know, so it's so life's so tough.
Look, yeah, I think the only thing that Durban could beef up, though, when it comes to getting in and out of the city is transport to the airport, because it's still like you pay a little over 400 rand, well, from my side of town, to Uber to the airport, because mm-hmm. there's just nothing
right
close right. to it. Yeah.
Well, because today is like a mini Monday, we've got Anthea popping in. We've got
our
feature with Revix about cryptocurrency. Looking good, huh?
Don't let it confuse you. It is a Tuesday.
$9,282 for Bitcoin this morning and Ethereum at $272.
Oh, must be.
Yeah,
nice.
It's good. It's coming along. Oh, thanks, geez, God.
It was quiet for so long.
I know. We've got to get back up to that $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. Then people will finally have money again. People that invested in Bitcoin.
Finally have money again.
They will. They'll be, you want to see a bunch of people dancing in the street? Look, it won't be a lot, but there'll be a few people suddenly be very happy if it gets back up to anywhere near there, because they wouldn't have. Yeah, I know some people who bought Bitcoin at exactly the wrong time and then ended up cashing out when it was less than half of the value that they bought it at.
Ooh.
Now that's terrible.
Yeah.
If you held on to it.
It's pretty tragic.
Yeah, I mean, that's awful. But if you held on to it, then I suppose you could be, you know, you'd be waiting for something better to come along. And for some good news, finally.
Yeah, what did Kenny Rogers ever teach you?
You got to know when to hold 'em.
There we go.
Know when to fold 'em. Know when to walk away.
Yes.
Know when to run.
See?
You never count your money. When it's sitting on a table, there'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
Take that for Bitcoin advice from Kenny Rogers.
Fucking right.
How was your weekend, Leanne?
It was good. I did a bit of family stuff.
Oh, yeah?
Ooh, I cleaned out my cupboards. I haven't done that in 2 years.
It was Father's Day, guys.
Yes,
it was Father's Day.
You know,
the least favorite day on Twitter. All those miserable people who don't have father figures and they come out and bitch at everybody every other day of the year, they're suddenly all quiet on Father's Day.
Oh, well, combined it was also Youth Day, so I saw a lot of, to all the childish daddies out there,
Were people attacking their, like, absentee fathers? Yes. Oh, God.
So childish you walked away, so childish you don't pay maintenance,
Oh, my word. It's interesting how...
These people should not have smartphones.
Yeah. So
one of my clients is a fine dining restaurant.
Oh.
And they were saying how for Mother's Day, people book a month or three in advance. Father's Day, they book on the weekend. Yeah. It's so lastminute.com with dads.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, like most people, I said to my dad, because I was away, I said, you know what, we'll do something when I'm back and maybe my brother and sister are around as well and we'll make something happen. But he's not fussed about it.
Yeah. No, fathers aren't.
They don't really give a shit.
But you do know what trouble you'll be in with your mom if you don't.
Oh, big time. Big
well,
time.
Fathers are just different like that. I was watching Jimmy Kimmel. Yes.
Got to remember which Jimmy.
Yeah. Mm. Like, well, which one? New York, LA. Jimmy Kimmel, and he did one of his pedestrian inserts where he was stopping pedestrians just outside the studio, and they were asking fathers questions about their children.
Oh, yes, I saw this clip.
Such a cringe fest. No, because it was asking fathers simple questions.
Like, but the fathers are standing there with their kids next to them.
And they don't know what their kids are up to.
They don't know their birthdays. They don't know who their best friends are. They
don't know their kids' doctors.
Yes. Oh,
that's great.
And
I
then
love that.
After that, they pull in the mom and ask the same questions.
And she knows all the
and
answers.
And she's got like six kids. And she's like, 1st of August, 1971, 3rd of May.
Oh, that's hilarious.
This one's best friend is so-and-so, best friend so-and-so, doctor, name, dentist, name.
Wow.
Fathers are just like that.
I don't care.
It made me think about once for parents' evening, because my dad didn't take me to and from school every day. I had to remind my dad of the directions to my own school.
Of course.
I'm like, no, when you get there as well, my teacher's name is so-and-so, just by the way, and you go in. And, you know,
I know that there are a lot of dads who are a lot more involved now than before, but there are still some who seem to think that just by bringing in money, that's all they have to do.
Mm.
And they don't have to get involved at all.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
It's like, I'm the breadwinner there. I've done my bit.
Well, that's sometimes enough.
Well, it can be, but know your child's
birthday.
That's
the kind of father I would be.
Yeah.
What do you want? What do you want from me?
Is asking to remember your child's birthday
too much?
No, because
also, because I also have to earn
money. You're so needy, you two.
I also have to earn money, and I have to maybe be the breadwinner, and I have to know their birthdays and doctors.
Maybe I should ask my dad when I get to see them this week. I'll send him.
When is
my birthday? See if he actually knows.
Yeah.
He might not, and it wouldn't bother me. I don't know why you guys are sensitive about it.
It wouldn't bother you?
Not at all. I know my dad loves me. I know he loves my brother and sister. He's been there looking after us every step of the way. He cares. This is your own insecurity you're projecting.
No, I don't know. It just feels weird. I know his birthday.
Mm. Yeah, but it's because you're the kid.
But also in our family, it's easy because my dad's is on Christmas Day.
Oh, well, that.
And my mom's is on mine.
So you don't have to worry a damn thing. Leanne just has to look at her calendar and go, oh, it's my birthday. Hey, mom, happy birthday.
Yeah.
Maybe Christmas. You are asking for too much.
It's Jesus
there.
and my dad.
Okay, yeah.
No, I think, look, the people have complicated relationships with their parents, and no less in South Africa than anywhere else in the world. Because it really, for some people, is a very touchy subject.
Mm.
And it hurts, you know. A lot of people don't have any relationship with their father. And it can be very ugly. So I don't think Father's Day is a massive priority for everyone. Some people don't want to be in there at all.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to discuss it. Don't want to get down and dirty with it. Don't want to talk to their fathers or the about their fathers. It's just leave it alone.
Yeah, it's pretty rare that the same happens for moms.
No, well, you see, point is mom has to carry you to 9 months, and then if you make it past that, then you've got her and she's got you. There's no way out of that.
Yeah.
Dad can make a donation and disappear.
Yeah.
Which I don't advise, by the way. I think that's the worst irresponsible behavior you could ever have. It's one of the reasons I don't have kids yet. I'm not sure that I want to be a father. I'm not sure that it's a priority for me.
Mm.
Some other little person that I have to suddenly make sure doesn't turn out to be a psychopath. And children can. They can go very wrong. And sometimes, you know, people put a huge amount of responsibility on the mom, but a lot of especially if it's a little boy. I mean, you've heard Craig Wilkinson on the show before. The guy wrote Dad, and he hosted that podcast series we did.
Man to Man,
not so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
He said many times, you underestimate the value, even if the father isn't necessarily involved in the day-to-day stuff, the value of a male role model in a young man's life is enormous, and a woman, because frankly, young girls grow up thinking that men have to be like their fathers.
Mm.
And if their fathers are good, upstanding men, then they'll end up with good, upstanding husbands one day, because they you can't help it. That's how you project. Mm. Monkeys do this. All animals do this. We use an example of someone who we have a relationship with as the example of for all people. We decide that that's how it's got to be. That's why you end up with these terrible situations where you have abusive fathers or even mothers. And then the children become abusive to their children and so on. You get these cycles of of just violence and ugliness in families. And it's generational. And if you have a good role model, a male and female good role model, but particularly for boys, a father they can look up to, then they turn into fathers that are worth looking up to.
Mm. No, I mean, as a parent, you, if you're dealing with, say, a frustrated toddler who's throwing a temper tantrum, immediately you think, oh, well, what would my dad have done? How would he have handled this?
Exactly.
And without even realizing it, you do it, whether it's shouting or slapping or whatever.
Oh.
I must play something for you quickly I heard over the weekend. Bill Maher, you know, host of Real Time, he did this commencement speech, which is hilarious. It was a fake one, but he basically was talking to Gen Z.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, I mean, it's like quite hard hitting, but he goes into this whole parents thing. And, you know, he talks about helicopter parents and how the Gen Z parents are like bulldozer parents.
Oh, no, Gen.
Oh.
Listen to this quickly. This is quite interesting. I'm just going to fast forward to the part where he's actually, you know, he gets up there and starts talking because otherwise it's too long. So listen to this. He's putting on a fake speech, right?
Honored alumni, legacy students, parents, grandparents, step-parents, third wives, and drunk uncles. I know it's traditional at graduations, commencement ceremonies to break the ice with a joke. So here goes. A man walks into a bar. Of course, it doesn't have to be a man. It absolutely could be a woman. But then who am I to write a joke about a female when I don't have first-hand experience of a woman's struggle? So a non-binary, non-gender-conforming humanoid walks into a bar and orders a drink, and the bartender says, "You took too long, we closed 20 minutes ago." Well, I see that about 50% of you are texting, so I can tell already this will be somewhat pointless.
Oh.
But it is my job as your graduation speaker to tell you that you're a very special group of young people and the future belongs to you. But let's not kid ourselves. You're not that special, and the future belongs to China and our robot overseers. But... Okay, okay, all right. Let me see if I can fake it. You're the smartest, you're the best, and thanks to that photography degree you now have, you're going to change the world.
Right?
Now, I want you to look in the gallery today and find your two best friends, Mom and Dad. They're the ones who worked and sacrificed to scrape together the half a million in bribes. Needed to get you into this $1,000 a year keg party they call a college. And parents, I'm here today to tell you that the results of your parenting have been incredible for the pharmaceutical industry.
Right?
Because these kids are fucked up and need drugs. Oh, yeah. They need drugs for the crushing levels of anxiety they have, brought on by the knowledge that after the way you pampered and spoiled them, life is going to crush them like the white kid in a spelling bee. Hey, I'm just trying to be your friend, which is someone who tells you the truth. And the truth is, the world is unfair. It's not like college. It's like the Electoral College. And you kids, you're about to enter freshman year of life. And that can be very unsettling, much like the slap in the face that your parents should have given you the first time you swore at them. But they didn't. They didn't. And so you became the "Hey, buddy" generation. "Hey, buddy, could you put your shoes on? Hey, buddy, could you get in the car?" But in real life, not everyone is your fucking buddy. And that's why you're fucked. No, I mean really fucked, because no one ever told you no, or you're wrong, or you're in the way, or that's not good enough, or wait. So you think the whole world is supposed to be your safe space, where everything is wonderful and nobody even gets their feelings hurt. Well, kids, I have some very bad news for you. Mr. Rogers is dead. And so, new graduates, as you look back at where you've been and where you're about to go, I want you to turn to your parents and take this opportunity to tell them, thank you. Thank you for murdering any chance I had of actually making it in the real world. Thank you for covering the walls of my childhood room with fake certificates and fade-up bullshit like third-grade gym superstar and most improved finger painter and world champion paste eater. Thank you for trophies I got for just showing up. Thank you for the temper tantrums you let me throw in the cereal aisle. Thank you for bitching out every teacher who ever gave me a B instead of an A, even though I really deserved a C. And thank you for teaching me that any thought, word, or action, or feelings I had was unfair. Which didn't make me a liberal, it made me Donald Trump.
How's that?
Oh,
huh?
Wow.
How's that? So there we go, Gen Z. That's what you got to look forward to. Courtesy of Bill Maher.
Mm.
Well, all right.
That's a reality check unlike any other.
Yeah. All right, let's get into some other reality checks. You want to know what's going on in the news?
Yes.
Okay, I've got some good news. Do you want some good news on a Tuesday morning?
Yes.
Even though it feels like a Monday? Okay. Petrol price is going to drop. 90 cents a litre expected in July. The association, that of course is the people who decide the petrol price, the Automobile Association. No, they're not the petrol price deciders, but they are the people who will tell us what's going on there, because they're actually interested in private car ownership and in people having licenses and all the rest of it. The AA have said it is confident motorists will be treated to a petrol price drop next month. They said experts have said the petrol price is going to go by about 90 cents a litre.
Hmm.
Diesel and illuminating paraffin will go down by 70 cents and 62 cents, respectively. So there are drops all across the board. AA spokesperson Leighton Beard said these decreases are due to retreating oil prices.
Yes, but for how long?
Well, if the Iranians continue taking out ships in the Strait of Hormuz,
mm-hmm.
not very long, but yeah. Let's go with it.
Like 90 cents is a significant chunk.
I'll take it.
I was very surprised because I was expecting it to go up because of the tanker explosions.
I know, this is very surprising. So let's just hold thumbs, shall we? And then apparently there was a shootout on our South African border. The Defence Force, what we call the South African National Defence Force, has said a board of inquiry will be established to investigate the causes of a shooting incident between its soldiers and the Mozambican Border Police yesterday.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Brigadier General Mafim Gobozi said they could not confirm if there were fatalities or injuries during the incident, which took place at Ndumo, along the South African-Mozambican border. So Ndumo is on the far northern corner of KwaZulu-Natal, right? And Mgobozi said SANDF soldiers were conducting routine patrols as part of the borderline protection when suddenly the shooting broke out. The details are still sketchy, but the reasons for the shooting are unknown. At the present moment, we have a team who will be sent to the place so they can get more information. So it sounds very confusing. Sounds like even the army are confused by what happened there.
It could have been anything from like a personal spat to...
Yeah. Jealous lovers.
Yeah, love triangles.
You never know, right? Yeah. And then South African Airways have got a pilots association that they say the newly appointed interim CEO of the airline, Zukisa Ramasia, is not the right person for the job, and the group has threatened to strike in a bid to force necessary changes.
Oh my gosh.
Here we go.
He's barely settled in.
I think it's a she.
She.
In a statement issued on Monday, the association described the recent developments as a cause for profound distress and concern, which require a competent leadership team. Well, isn't that... That's not too much to ask. A competent leadership team? SAA needs
that's
an interim...
That's like the basics.
I know. SAA needs an interim CEO with the appropriate experience and financial acumen to successfully run a major airline. Unfortunately, Ms. Ramasia is not that person. She's a former general manager of operations at the airline and was appointed acting CEO on June 7th following the resignation of Vuyani Jaran. Now, the association said it would seek the views of members on the appropriate action over the matter. But what? Here's the problem. SAA is just not running profitably. And the reason for that is that we employ far too many people at SAA. We need to fire 2/3 of our workforce. But that's not going to happen because the unions won't let the government fire them. So SAA is now running at a huge deficit, and they keep asking for government bailouts. And this poor person, this Zukisa Ramasia, is going to come in now, and what's she going to do? She's caught between a rock and a hard place. She can't do anything.
Yeah, it's almost as if there was a quick shuffle around because of the resignation.
Yeah, so the Pilots Association, I don't know what you guys are expecting, like miracles? They're not suddenly going to bring in a CEO who can actually make decisions, because then it would put the government and the unions at loggerheads.
It can take years to find someone like that.
Oh, God. All right, let's see what happens. And by the way, while we're on disasters, failed state-owned enterprises, the SABC, apparently their financial position has been worsening over the last 9 months, and the public broadcaster is at the mercy of its creditors. It's awaiting a decision on its application for a 3.2 billion rand financial support from the government.
Is anyone surprised by this?
No.
4 billion for SAA, 3 billion for the SABC.
Mm-hmm. It's just such a disaster.
Yeah, I certainly wasn't expecting to hear the opposite.
No, apparently the creditors are like snapping at their heels. I'll tell you what you can do. Go in and just, you know, take lights and cameras and microphones and sell them. See what you can get for them. I don't care if the SABC goes under. None of those business units are operational in any significant way, and none of them are making money. I mean, I hear from people often, and I've got to be careful about this because I used to work at the SABC, so did Leanne. Mm-hmm. And anytime I talk about them, they think, oh, well, I'm just bitter. Remember, I resigned and left them. I'm not bitter about any of this. Mm. I don't hate the SABC, but it is objectively a disaster. None of the places that we worked before, in television or in radio, are making money. Their ratings are in the toilet. They have no commercial interest. No one's buying airtime. When we were doing that morning show, we had 4 commercial breaks an hour, right?
Yeah.
4 commercial breaks an hour that were full. That means between 3 and 6 commercials per break.
Plus hundreds of live reads.
So let me explain how radio works. If you don't have those commercials, you don't make money. If you don't make money, you're running at a loss. You're basically costing someone money. And in this case, it's the taxpayer. Mm-hmm. Because that's it's a publicly owned company. The biggest shareholder in the SABC, in fact, it's to my mind the only shareholder, is the government. Right?
Yeah, for sure.
Now, I don't know how many commercial breaks they've got going on there at the moment, but I know their ratings are in the toilet. And when you don't have listeners, then you don't get commercials.
Then what are you selling on?
That's right. Then no one cares. So I haven't listened to the station we were on.
I have quite recently. I honestly don't think much has changed.
Really?
In terms of the listener's experience.
It's the same?
Yeah.
But the ratings are dropping. That's undeniable. And commercially, is there anything going on? I mean, do you hear a lot of ads, or is it mostly promos for other shows?
No, that's what I'm referring to, actually, is the not necessarily the quality of the show, but nothing's changed in terms of the structure of each show. Hmm. It's exactly the same. Same ad breaks.
Wow. Okay. Well, then clearly they're still making some money. But I don't imagine that that's the case for the whole SABC.
No, certainly not.
All right. So they need 3.2 billion rand. Let's see what happens there.
You know, I was chatting to a friend of mine who's an auditor who had to work on the SAA audit. Mm-hmm. And she said, she didn't know how else to break it down to SAA to say, we can't be in a position where you're just calling out for money. It doesn't make sense.
But these are not business people. These are government people that don't know how to make money. Remember, no one in government has ever made any money. And I include our president. He was the beneficiary of a whole bunch of BEE deals. That's all. None of them have made money. They're not successful business people.
Well, that was a sobering moment from last week's burning platform, where Kai actually made us think, like, right. What business did our presidents ever start?
He didn't. He was just the first politician to go into business and then used his connections on both sides to make himself very wealthy. And don't get me wrong, I like Cyril, he's a nice human being, and he's probably competent at a few things, but so far, his record's hardly sterling, right?
Mm.
Remember, government knows how to spend money. They don't know how to make money. How do they make money? They force it from us.
Yes.
By taxes. They know how to make money.
And, you know, it's a misconception as well, a widespread misconception. Listening to one of my mom's carers, she was talking about RDP housing, and she said, you know, I don't know why the government just doesn't buy more houses. And my mom said, the government doesn't have money. It comes from taxpayers.
Yeah,
she had no idea that taxpayers' money was being used to build RDP houses. She thought the government had money.
Yeah. See, this is the level of education we need to do. Anyway, last thing in the news, I saw that Mohamed Morsi, do you remember who he is?
Rings a bell.
Former Egyptian president. He was the one who was put in that cage for all these trials that they've been having. Mohamed Morsi has died in a Cairo hospital after fainting during a session in court.
Jeez.
He was speaking before the judge for 20 minutes, then became very animated and fainted. He was quickly rushed to the hospital and then died.
Jeez, that was fast.
Right. He was accused of collaborating with adverse foreign powers and militant groups, judicial and security sources had said. The court granted him special request to speak for 5 minutes. He fell to the ground in the cage and was transported immediately to the hospital. A medical report found no pulse or breathing, the Office of the Attorney General said in a statement. So there he is. Mohamed Morsi, gone. Didn't make much of a positive impact on Egypt either. So there's the news. Those are the stories you need to know about today. As I said, Bitcoin over $9,000 this morning. We'll talk to Revix in a little while. Get to hear what they have to say about that and a bunch of other stuff. Also, Anthea Gardner. There's no Ben today. So, Anthea, do you want to come in? Where's Anthea?
And she's nodding yes.
Yeah, well, come in then.
Anthea,
would you like a gilt-edged invitation? Did you feel that we'd thrown you out after Henry'd been in once or twice and you'd been doing these Ironmans and half Ironmans? And yes. I mean, you know, we were just worried about you. So now
sidelines. And by the way, why haven't I had a gilt-edged invitation before?
Well, we don't really give those out anymore. Oh. We've stopped. But if you like them, we can always get you one.
We've run out of gold for the gilt-edged.
I'll take my song.
All
instead.
Right, here's your song. Good. Good compromise. That's right. And Anthea's got a brand new book out, which you can get at any good bookstore.
Indeed.
You can also order it
online.
If it
isn't there, then it's not a good bookstore.
Exactly. Yeah.
Shun that store.
And if you're free on Thursday evening, we're doing the launch at Exclusive Books in Hyde Park.
Very nice.
At 6 p.m.
Very
Look
good.
At you promoting.
How am I doing? Yes, I see it. Good. You approve?
Excellent. This is much better than what you were doing up to now.
Yes, I got a lecture last week about this from a certain Cliff Central.
All right, let's talk about the two Japanese oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz. We spoke about this a little bit earlier on in terms of the oil price and this possible petrol price decrease, which is very interesting. I don't know whether the AA took into consideration what's going on in world affairs, because I think actually petrol price may go up.
So I think this attack of the Japanese oil tankers by the Iranians is definitely an event and a catalyst for a higher oil price, because the oil was up 4% a barrel immediately after the attack. But actually, you know what? It doesn't change the supply-demand dynamics of oil at all. And in fact, what we're seeing is quite the opposite, where there's quite a bit of supply. So since then, the oil price has retreated. Brent crude is now trading at $60.90 a barrel, and at almost a $10 premium to WTI. So I think there might still be a good case for a decrease in the petrol price. What you did see, though, is markets were really nervous about just stability and war possibilities and this sort of thing. So we saw lots of traders moving immediately into yen. Japanese yen, can you believe that is still a safe haven currency? I mean, I don't know how that happens, honestly. And then gold, which is this crazy, lingering, historic feature, I think. You know, it's not like you can
You've
eat
never
gold.
Liked gold.
I've never liked Yeah, it's, I have a thing against it.
You don't like
it
gold.
It makes no fundamental investment sense to me. And that's the problem. I know what drives it. So I know that people think that if there's going to be a war, buy gold and we'll convert it to currency later at a later stage. And when it's the Indian wedding season, you'll always see at the beginning of October, November, there's a spike in the gold price because they buy huge amounts of gold.
Oh, really?
It's every single year. It's fabulous to watch. But the fundamental investment case for it, I struggle with it. Anyway, we saw those ultra-safe government bonds, yen, gold, all increase, and all the traders ran to that last week on this attack. I mean, unfortunately for Sasol, they didn't take advantage of it, or the share price doesn't seem to have taken advantage of it. Like when oil was up 5%, Sasol was up like 10 basis points, you know, like 1.1%.
Why is Sasol just... They used to be a very forward-thinking, smart, like technologically advanced business. They were turning
they were
turning coal into gas and all kinds of interesting things. Now they're like almost a bit of a wart on the economy. You know, they kind of just sit there and languish. They don't do very much.
Unfortunately,
who's
in the
running
last,
that place?
In the I can't remember his name.
Well, that's probably part of the problem.
But one of them had to resign recently. One of the big guys had to resign because of this Lake Charles methane plant in the US. And they've just got such a bad reputation of having projects over budget and delayed. And then it just costs. So when you work out, when you decide to do a project in the beginning, you say, okay, it's going to cost me $100. And I'll spend the $100. And if I sell X amount of product, I'll make back my $100 in 2 years, right? But then if the project costs $200, then it's going to take you 4 years. And if you don't sell as much, maybe it'll take you 5 or 6 years. So your IRR, we call it your rate of return, your internal rate of return that we calculate on these projects, suddenly goes from kind of, oh, look, we're going to make, as long as this project lasts, maybe, I don't know, 30, 40% per annum. But the more you delay it, the more you spend on it, the less product you sell out of it, the lower this IRR. And suddenly it's like, well, actually, was this a good investment case or not? And in Sasol's case, you know, so Lake Charles, for example, they told us it was going to cost $3 billion. It's come out at 14 almost. And it's been delayed by years. And now suddenly you're thinking, well, was that really worth it? Anyway, and that's the problem with Sasol. So I think when the oil price jumps and Sasol doesn't, it's just a case of investors being nervous about Sasol and actually not believing them. And in my case, I thought, oh, maybe I should buy some Sasol shares. But I actually just sat there and thought, well, no, because what I really want is for Sasol to prove to me and show me proof, like tangible proof, that they can deliver on time and that they're not going to up the costs of Lake Charles by another $1 billion in the next year or 6 months as they have done in the past.
Right. Sure.
And unfortunately, you know, these trade wars really have continued and have really got the market nervous. And so emerging market shares are under a lot of pressure at the moment. And of course, you know, we're an emerging market, so we fall in line with it. And then, of course, the protests about this extradition law in Hong Kong hasn't helped. And then the upcoming G20, there's a lot of discussion that potentially Donald Trump may interfere. And the Chinese have said to him, can you not interfere, please? And he said, well, I won't. Meanwhile, we're all sitting there going, we're waiting for you to say something at the G20. Like, we just know he's going to.
Yeah, I hear all of this, but he's consistently avoided throughout his presidency. It's only, you know, he hasn't finished yet the first term, but he's avoided any attempts at strikes anywhere, any military action. The guy's really, he's a dove by military and imperialist standards. I mean, Obama took like a month or two before he started ordering drone strikes on parts of the Middle East. And George W. Bush, before that, we know, started the Afghanistan and Iraq war. You know, you can go back in history. Trump is a pacifist, if nothing else. And we hear this, but you know, all he's done here is he's antagonized China by forcing them to stop stealing intellectual property, or at least pay a price for it with tariffs.
But Gareth, we've spoken so much about Smoot Hawley, you know, and you always chastise me for saying, remember Smoot Hawley of 1930? We believe those trade wars is what caused the Great Depression and partly World War II. So just because it's only trade wars doesn't mean it's potentially not going to escalate.
I hate this tariff thing. You know that. Yeah. I think Trump's an idiot for having the tariffs brought in. I think that's destructive and frankly, it's anti-free market, right?
Absolutely.
I don't like it one bit.
And everyone's retaliated. China's retaliated. Europe have retaliated. Mexico. I don't know exactly what happened there. That was a weird one. Well, I'm going to impose tariffs and then I'm not. And then the Mexicans came out a week later and said, yeah, that's because we had discussions 3 weeks ago. You know, like he's not honest, you know.
We know Trump's not honest. If there's something, that's one thing that's also consistent about him. He's just completely dishonest all the time.
When does his term come to an end? Does anybody know?
He's going to be there for another 4 years after this.
You think so?
Absolutely.
Wow. That's going to be interesting. And then we might even have Boris Johnson in the UK. That's good. It just doesn't
You
end.
Are going to get Boris Johnson.
I know. It's going to be fun and games, eh? Enough said about that.
Oh, dear. All right. His face just dropped.
Let's come back to here. Let's talk about mining for a minute.
Okay.
Because the mining sector is just it's a dwarf of what it once was.
Shrinking and shrinking and shrinking.
It's an embarrassment, actually. And our country is still so heavily reliant on the mining sector for GDP.
So last week, we had mining production numbers show that mining production fell by 1.5% for the last quarter. And in fact, gold fell by a staggering 19.5%. Gold production fell by 19.5%. I'm not sure if it was last week or the week before. We were overtaken by Ghana as the biggest gold producer on the continent.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hmm. So we've now been overtaken. We are no longer the largest producer of gold. Okay. But you know, I mean, Ghana is probably the
I was waiting
fastest
for you to confirm.
Growing
I saw
country.
That in the news and I thought, no, unless Anthea says so, I don't believe it. No, I believe you.
Yeah, no, their GDP growth is, I think, about 11% at the moment or something.
Oh, my God.
It's phenomenal. And
this just shows you it's possible. I mean, here's Ghana. They don't have as much as we have. We're just shit at running everything.
And remember, I was there last year.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like a Sandton or a Cape Town waterfall or nothing. And they're doing phenomenally. Granted, their GDP growth is off a low base.
Yeah, but, right? But 11%.
I know, isn't that phenomenal?
We would be thrilled with half of that.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
thrilled.
Sure. Imagine that.
Mm. But it's because of this crap government that we've got, we can't even get to a tenth of that.
And unfortunately, another one of our leading indicators is the business confidence. And that came out last week as well, unchanged at 28. 50, just for the record, is the neutral.
So it's very negative.
It is. It's possibly one of the lowest. If you look at the graph, it's not the lowest reading we've had in the last 20 years, but it's probably second or third lowest. So it's there was a reading, I think, of 26 in 96.
Mm-hmm. That's when no one knew what was going on, right?
That's right. So
no
everyone was really nervous. Yeah. That's right. So, of course, business confidence was low and businesses weren't investing in their business because they weren't employing people because they didn't know what was going to happen, right? And then I think again in 2008 or 2009, when people weren't sure of what's going on, it also fell like to 27, somewhere around there. And those were real events. Those were, you can explain it. Our business confidence at this stage should not be this low. So I don't know that people are not trusting the government to be able to create opportunities or to grow the economy or to implement policy certainty, but there's a lot of uncertainty in the markets at the moment. There really is.
All right. Can we quickly talk about Naspers and shares in general?
Yeah. So there wasn't much in the way of shares last week. Naspers put out a trading statement saying that their headline earnings per share would increase by between 31% and 33%. There's just no stopping it. And of course, the share price rallied despite Tencent being down on the day that it announced. And in fact, there's not much to say about it because NASPERS are only releasing their full results this Friday, which is always a bit of a drama because we feel like we need a whole week to digest it. And then I think also the shares rallying ahead of their listing in Amsterdam. So they announced 2 weeks that they're listing in Amsterdam. And that really, so what we've been saying in the past is that they should unlock value, you know, so first there was MultiChoice and how they're going to unbundle all the businesses. What about Tencent? Because their 31% stake in Tencent is now worth the entire market cap. So if you add up all the shares and where they're trading, multiply it by where they're trading, the number of shares outstanding, that is lower than just their Tencent holding. So their one investment is worth more than the 1.5 trillion rand that it shows on the JSE. So effectively, it should trade up. But because it's such a huge component of the JSE, it makes up 25% of the JSE. So your pension fund basically is a quarter NASPERS, which is shocking. Yeah. And asset managers like myself, we don't like this. We do not want to be reliant on one share in our portfolio being so heavily weighted. And also, it's been quite volatile recently. So what happens is when it gets to 15 or 20, we sell. You know, we don't want to be more than 10% or 15% in one share only. So
no, it's very dangerous. We know from Steinhoff.
Oh, there you. Oh, talk about. We must talk about Tongard quickly as well.
Yes, what it is. You did. The canaries were in the coal mine with you early on, Tongard.
Yes, look, we mentioned it, and then I went into the office on Monday, and shares were suspended.
There we go.
Anyway, so NASPERS, I think because of this huge weighting in the index, it's actually being held down by being listed in South Africa and South African asset
managers.
How long
before they decide to unlist it here and list it somewhere else?
Ah, such a good question.
Because they're not going to stay. What for? Why must they prop up the whole South African stock exchange? And when that happens, will it be worth investing on the South African stock market at all?
Such a good question, Gareth. I mean, that's really forward thinking. But yeah.
It's so inevitable.
I don't know if it's in a hurry inevitable, but it does feel a bit like a lot of companies are doing this. I mean, in Steinhoff's case, they went to Germany because, well, they were just up to a whole lot of skullduggery, and it suited them to be listed in a foreign country or have so many different legal entities so that they could move money between it and, you know, nobody could trace it. So if the regulators in South Africa said, but where did this go? They go, Germany. And the German regulators, they'd say, oh, British Virgin Islands. And so it was just like they were playing this game. Okay. NASPERS is not the same. I hope it's not.
Let's see.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that that's likely.
We'll watch this space. Where is CEO? We also have to talk about another company called Beyond Meat. Am I running out of time?
Beyond Meat. But let's just talk Tongard quickly and then we get to Beyond Meat.
So Tongard last Friday,
last Monday.
You told
us about Beyond Meat. I think you, was either
yes,
you
we
or
did
it could have been Henry.
Yeah.
That basically that this is a company that 3D prints artificial meat.
I don't know if it's 3D printed, but they make it from pea protein, soya, mung beans.
Okay.
The share was up 10% again. So since IPO on the 2nd of May.
Hasn't it been very oversubscribed?
Totally oversubscribed. No. And just a little bit too expensive for my liking. But the share's been up. It's up 550% since the beginning of May, since
very
it listed. And then yesterday they announced that they're releasing a ground beef, and so the share was up 10%. I mean, there's just no stopping the share. It's ridiculous.
And then can you report this without rolling your eyes?
You're like, this is good. I reckon that we've got to find alternatives to meat.
I think it is great, but it's, I don't know what PE it's trading on at the moment. We should look that up. Google Beyond Meat price earnings ratio and see. But
that's the first time C has ever typed in Beyond Meat Google, you know,
price
earnings ratio on Google. Just quickly, Tongard Hewlett, and then I want to get to Revix.
Okay. So Tongard Hewlett, they asked for their shares to be suspended on Monday. So you can no longer buy or sell Tongard shares on the JSE. And they're now also investigating some of their CEOs. And they're saying that it's not just that they revalued their land at 4.5 billion rand more than they should have, but also that they said they'd sold off a piece of land and the money never hit the bank. Now, how the auditors don't pick this up is beyond me.
That's unbelievable.
It's spectacular. I mean, what were they thinking? I can't see the price earnings PE ratio, please.
See, is no good at this.
No, not at all.
All right, Anthea, we'll report that number just now.
All right, super.
But thank you so much. Guys. Anthea Gardner and The Money Shot. It's time to check in with Revix and find out from Sean Saunders what's happening in the world of cryptocurrency. We woke up this morning, Bitcoin price at $9,261, Ethereum at $271, and Litecoin still blazing a trail at $133. These are all good reasons to check in with Sean Saunders. Find out what's going on in the world of cryptocurrencies. So, Sean, how are you, man?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, very good. Thanks yourself.
Good. I know that all the real experts in crypto don't really pay as much attention to the price as the ordinary pedestrians. But for people who've never invested before, and these are the kind of people who you're trying to teach in Revix about indexes and weighted portfolios and, you know, different kinds of platforms that you guys are selling, this could be the entry point. Like, the price is an important factor, right? People aren't going to just invest because they think it's a good idea long term on the basis of the technology.
Oh yeah, no, most certainly. I mean, price at the end of the day, it results in the value creation. So if you're buying at a low price and you're selling at a high price, you've made money. I mean, that's what people essentially invest in any asset for. So no, most certainly, that's very important.
And we were talking just earlier about the oil price, and we were talking about the rand and emerging markets that are coming under huge pressure with Anthea. How can cryptocurrencies be thought of in terms of currency hedging?
Well, so it's great because cryptocurrencies, the most important factor behind cryptocurrencies is really that they're independent of national currencies like the rand. Mm-hmm. So the rand is heavily dependent on South African interest rates, economic growth, credit ratings, Eskom not failing, South African Airways not needing further guarantees, whereas, you know, cryptocurrencies depend on other things. So they depend on the levels of adoption. So people that use Bitcoin or Litecoin for remittances, as an example, mm-hmm. they depend on the regulatory clarity. So, you know, what do we classify cryptocurrencies as? Are they commodities or are they currencies? And then the platform usability, and we still have a very long way to go on this, but how easy is it to actually use cryptocurrencies? And I mean, what's quite interesting is if you actually look at the Rand versus the US dollar, or Bitcoin versus the US dollar, you're seeing two very different trends over the short term and the long term. So mm-hmm. over the short term, so say a 1 year horizon, you've seen the Rand depreciate by 10% versus the US dollar.
Wow.
Whereas Bitcoin's appreciated, increased in value by 44%. Over the medium term, so say 5 years, the Rand's depreciated by 40% and Bitcoin's appreciated by 1,400%. And over the longer term, so say 10 years, you've got the Rand that's depreciated by 83%, whereas Bitcoin is up 7,000%. And, you know, obviously these are two very different assets. They've got different growth trajectories and all the rest. But the real thing that you need to hit home here is the Rand's depreciated by 83%. So that means that if you bought a home 10 years ago in South Africa, that house of yours would needed to have appreciated by 83% just to have maintained its dollar value. And if you throw inflation into that, it goes up to 140%. So your house would have needed to have appreciated by 140% just to have maintained its real dollar value. And South Africa is actually really lucky if you compare us to other emerging markets. So Zimbabwe's lost 100% of its currency's value. Mm-hmm. The Venezuela, Bolivia is down 99%. Argentina's peso is down 75%. Turkey's lira is down 71%. And the Russian ruble is down 52% over a 5 year horizon. And, you know, the same could happen for South Africa. And I suppose it's good to have some sort of a hedge or some sort of another bet that doesn't depend entirely on the Rand.
Sure. Those figures are quite jarring. I mean, I had no idea that when you factor in the depreciation of the Rand over X period of time, and all three of those, short term, medium and long, just show the most horrible decline. And if you compare that to what's happened with Bitcoin, obviously you had to get in at the right time, but It's undeniable that the one is a better investment than the others.
Yeah, so I mean,
listen to it's about all those, getting all in those at other the right international time. Currencies. Yeah. It's amazing. I'm curious though, because essentially what you're saying is, I don't really have a lot of faith in our government or our state-owned enterprises. I don't believe that they are competent financial managers of this economy. So one of the ways that I can legally own an asset that will perform better than my currency, my hard cash, is to invest in cryptocurrencies. And that sounds as simple as possible, but essentially we don't know enough as ordinary people about the cryptocurrency markets to be able to make all of the decisions ourselves. You're saying that there are ways to do this, indices that you can have that own different kinds of cryptocurrency, give you a bit of a spread, that will be much safer and more protected than, say, just going on to, you know, one of the other platforms and just buying the hard cryptocurrency yourself.
Yeah, so that's exactly what we're saying. We're saying that we can't pick the winners of this cryptocurrency space. We can't pick Bitcoin, we can't pick Ethereum, we can't pick Ripple. I mean, they're all fantastic cryptocurrencies right now, but if history is anything to go by, cryptocurrencies are volatile creatures. Mm. They fly up, they fly down. And what we do is we essentially offer bundles. We offer indexes of sorts to be able to invest in the cryptocurrency space, which means that you have diversified exposure. It means that on a monthly basis, your portfolio is automatically rebalanced, so you're constantly staying up to date with the market. Mm-hmm. And we believe that a diversified approach is smarter and the better way to approach this asset class for a couple of reasons. But, you know, cryptocurrencies are an alternative asset class, which is, you know, what's great about them is that they have a correlation close to zero. So this means that if the South African stock market tanks or if the property market declines, that means that cryptocurrencies aren't going to be affected by that. And they have this incredible asymmetrical investment opportunity. So if you think about the last 5 years in crypto, I mean, you've seen a 1,370% increase in Bitcoin and close to a 3,000% increase in the top 10 cryptocurrencies, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a stark difference in those two just from a return potential. But if you take, and this is what we advocate at Revix, we're saying if you take a measured approach, if you only invest say 2 to 5 or even 10%, if you're a lucky individual, in cryptocurrencies, you're taking a very calculated, measured amount and you're investing it, you potentially could earn 10 or 20 times your money. And at worst case, you could lose 100% of the money that you put in. So there's that asymmetrical return potential, which we believe is very appealing.
Sure. All right. Well, you've made the best case I've heard for a long time about why we should be thinking about cryptocurrencies. And a lot of people haven't just been thinking about it. They've been investing. So you can go along to Revix and find out more. They're on the Cliff Central website. There's a direct link through and you could start a portfolio. You don't need to put in hundreds of thousands of rands that you don't have, right, Sean?
Yeah, no, we allow you to invest from 500 rand and up.
Beautiful. All right. Thank you very much, man. Good to talk to you.
Great. Thanks, Gareth. Have a great day.
There's Sean Sanders, CEO of Revix. Find out more by going to cliffcentral.com. Open up your portfolio today. Let's see what you end up saying in a couple of weeks, maybe years' time. Maybe you'll be thrilled that this happened, right? I mean, it sounds better than waiting for the government to get their act together.
Yeah,
think that's going to happen.
Sounds better than playing the lotto.
Yeah, better than playing the lotto. That's a fairly low standard. But yeah, I'm with you. Playing the lotto. All right, we've got lots to talk about in the next little while. I've got a story about a family who's filed a human rights complaint after their six-year-old girl got upset by gender theory in school. There's just such craziness going on. Hmm. Also, Zinzi Mandela has opened her mouth and a whole lot of crap tumbled out. And now she's embarrassing the family, not for the first time, but we'll see what happens there. So plenty to talk about this morning. And if you've got something on your mind, 0797482090. That's where you can get hold of us this morning. Send us a voice note. You can send us a text message or you can tweet us, however you prefer to do it.
This is CliffCentral.com.